What's up, everybody? It's been a minute. We are back with some 4D. Of course, that is our beloved Dallas Cowboys. That is talking about the Doomsday defense, which, look, we're going to get into it, but man. And of course, yeah. We talk about the draft. We'll cover a little bit of that too. And I'm back with my beautiful Vanna White co-host. No, Joseph, how you doing?
Good, man. Just glad to be back and talking some Cowboys and getting into some interesting topics right now.
Yeah. And, you know, before we go, I do want to say, I know you're doing the midday thing. So for those of you listening who have not caught it yet, Joseph and our friend Camber are doing some midday Cowboys stuff on Twitter. So if you're not following both of them or either of them, please do so and catch yourself some midday Cowboys discussion. So I want to kind of pitch you there a little bit on that.
Yeah, appreciate that.
Of course. So we are about a quarter of the way into the season, right? Give or take. I mean, 17 games, like, okay, we get it. We're on game 4. I'm a little early. Yeah. But what I wanted to talk about was we've already started, even with or without Dak, I think we know some things about this team, right? And I think each of us, let's break down our five. We'll start with number five. I'll go five, you go five, and we'll keep going back and forth. Of five lessons that we've learned going up to, which you don't have to have it in order of importance or anything, but going up to one. So I think one of the things I think we've learned is that this offense is going to be a work in progress. You know, yes, we've won 2 games, but kind of hidden in that fact is really it's only been like 2 touchdowns or 3 touchdowns. And of that, right, it's only really occurred in like 2.5 quarters. So there's a little bit of like, look, they put up enough points. They've won. I'm not discrediting a thing that's going on. What I'm saying is we knew it would be a work in progress. And I think we're still seeing that it's a work in progress. They're making it work for now, but I think it's still a little bit of a work in progress.
Yeah. Definitely agree with that. Let me say my first one would be that we have a competent backup quarterback. I'm not saying that he's great. I'm not saying that he's a world beater. I'm not saying that he should be the new starting quarterback, or I'm not saying and agreeing with Barstool Sports, who wrote an article saying that he deserves $200 million contract. I'm saying he is a competent backup quarterback. And I don't think I knew that for sure going into this year. Yes, I know he won a game in Minneapolis last year, but that's still only one game. That was still really only his only real action in his career. He got in some garbage time before that, but like that was his first real action last year in that game. And then now he's coming back and he's playing. And he is a guy who I don't think he can go. He's going to go win you a game. Now, I say that and people might jump all over me and say, well, he has 3 game-winning drives. But he's not going to be a guy that's going to go out there and win you a shootout. You know, like it's just not the type of quarterback he is. But I think he is a guy who's not going to lose you a game. And he's going to protect the ball. And yeah, he'll take some risks, but he takes smart calculated risks. And so I think we have a competent backup right now. And just look at the difference between now and in 2020. And that's when we all thought we had a way more competent backup than Andy Dalton. So I gotta give it to Cooper Rush a little bit here.
Yeah, you knew me and my stance on him. We talked about it at training camp, and I was like, I'm telling you, Cooper's the guy.
I was wrong. I thought I was
Will Grier.
Will Grier. Yep. Yeah, I was wrong. 100%.
Yep. Yeah. And I'm not looking at for credit. I've always kind of liked how solid he was. Like, he would come mm-hmm. in even in preseason and he was just the same guy. Like, he didn't get rattled. He knew what he was. He wasn't. And I don't know. It just kind of stuck. And you know what? You're right. We have a capable backup. So that's awesome.
It's that ginger, no soul thing, man. He just mm-hmm. doesn't get rattled. He doesn't like get crazy overexcited. You know, he threw some touchdown passes and it seems like he's just walking back to a huddle. You know,
yep, like that's what he does daily.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's pretty wild.
But yeah, I mean, he's calm, cool, collected, and it doesn't look like the game's too big for him. So I agree. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the things we've learned is that the defense, the pass rush is great. And a lot of that's because they've used Micah so much as a pass rusher, which was mm-hmm. always my concern was like, if he's that guy, put him on the line. Like I've said it, if he's that guy, make him be a pass rusher, because that's what he's doing right now. Him, Tank, the pressure is, I think, better than I expected. And I think it's better than most people expected. Mm-hmm. Even if you thought Micah was going to be on the edge, I still think it was a little better than anybody expected. That said, I still think there are some concerns, in the run defense. And I'm not saying it's, you know, light the world on fire, the team's going to crash, but we've seen it that there is a little softness up that middle still, especially when they're able to, when the other team sees Mike has been pushed to the edge and they focus controlling him on that edge. We mm-hmm. saw, you know, New York did it a couple times to him where, you know, they had a triple team him, but it allowed some of that open in the middle to kind of open up because there wasn't the same pressure coming from the center as Micah or even Tank were doing. So mm-hmm. I think that's still something that's still another work in progress. But I think the pressure that this defense is bringing is more than any of us expected.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you're right with the run defense up the middle, just because I think we got a bunch of pass rushers and sometimes they get too far upfield. They're not holding their spot. They're not holding their lane. And it's creating a lot of holes. And really what killed them, I mean, you had that one run by mm-hmm. Barkley, the 36-yard run. Outside of that, he didn't do a ton of damage. But what really killed him this last game was allowing Daniel Jones just to go until they switched and put a spy, until they put Wilson a spy on him. He really was killing us up the middle. So that's something that they definitely have to watch moving forward. Because they do have that pass rush that
look, Anthony Barr has been great. Some of that has been the fact that they've had to move Micah mm-hmm. down to the edge, and they're figuring out, I think, how to plug that the right way in the linebacker. So,
All right. So next, I'm going to say the kicking game is better than I think anybody expected it to be. Like anybody, because we had the camp battle between Garibay and Hallelujah, and it was awful. They couldn't make kicks.
Yeah, neither of them. Neither of them.
And then we bring in Maher and we're all like, are you kidding me? We've already been through this. We've been through this before. But it was clear he was the best of the three. And it's like, all right, well, we're going with Maher. And he has earned the nickname back of Money Maher. I mean, he is almost perfect. He has one missed field goal on the year. And I don't even blame him. It's the end of the half, 59-yard field goal that had the distance, but it just went left a little bit. Anytime you're kicking 59 yards, you're not gonna get a complaint from me if you miss it, really.
Especially in that situation.
Especially in that situation. So credit to Maher for coming in. He said when he came in, he's a different kicker than he was when he was here last time, and he looks to be proving it. I mean, it's only three games. I get it, but he has been really solid in these first three games, and I couldn't be more happy.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think most of us look past it when it's decent, but when it's bad, we crush it. So yeah, mm-hmm. It's definitely one of those weird things in football that fans kind of ignore until they don't have to ignore it. I think one of the things we've learned is that, and it's partially part of the offense, but there is some concern with play calling. I think that the offense it looked better this week. I will give them that. But prior to this week, we were seeing route combinations that had two receivers or a tight end and a wide receiver in the exact same space. We saw, some really weird, they were trying trick plays, but they weren't really trick plays. It wasn't fooling anybody kind of stuff. And I think it got better this week. And I know Mike McCarthy was supposed to help step in with some of that and help with some of the play calling itself. And Reed, our friend Reed, put up a thing on how different the success rate of the play calling is from the scripted plays to the unscripted plays with Kellen. And I think hopefully, and we're going to talk about this a little bit, some of the people coming back will help with some of this, because they'll know the offense a little better. They understand certain things. But I think that's still a question. It looked better, but I mean, for the first four games, like we say, we're super confident in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you're starting to see Kellen get more comfortable with the personnel he has. He's since about almost halfway through the season last year, he's been limited in the personnel he has. I know he had, he missed Cooper and CD for two games. Jarwin went down, and that really was the start of a lot of issues with the offense last year when Jarwin went down. And then the offensive line has had its struggles, and the offensive line has started to play well to a degree. And then you're looking at these new young tight ends who are really starting to show up. We saw them really show up last week. Peyton Hendershot, not only blocking really well, but being a receiving threat. Same with Jake Ferguson. So you're seeing things, and he made a really, really nice adjustment the prior week with the Bengals, and then really against the Giants, is that for most of last year, and especially in the playoff game against the 49ers, and in Tampa Bay week one, Dak was getting pressured, constant pressure on him, constant getting hit and having to move and run out of the pocket. And when Dak went down, Kellen Moore basically said, okay, we got to put an end to that. And he's implemented a quick passing game, very quick passing game. Right now, Cooper Rush has the second fastest time to throw in the entire NFL.
Yep.
And only behind Tom Brady. Tom Brady is at
like 2 seconds flat. It's like 2 seconds flat. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's like, I think it's 2.46.
Yeah.
It's Tom Brady. And like, I mean, like 2.4 is Tom Brady and 2.46 is Cooper Rush. So he's right behind Brady by 0.6 of a second, 0.06 seconds, sorry. And so he's right behind him and he's getting the ball quick. And he basically, they're not allowing defensive lines to get pressure on Cooper Rush. And everybody's talking about, and I get it, this line is playing better. Larry is talking about, oh, they're giving up this many. Oh, he gave up one pressure. He gave up zero pressure. We're not even giving the defensive line a chance to pressure because Cooper Rush is getting that ball out like that. He's just going three-step drop, look, fire. And it's working. It is really working, and the receivers are responding to it. I've liked the adjustments, but we still need to make more. And I think as other players come back, as Dak comes back, as Gallup comes back, maybe Schultz comes back, you're going to see a lot more moving forward that's positive, I think.
Yep. Yep. So what's your fourth one here?
Let me see. I think that I'll say this. I felt confident in the safety group on this team. I really did. But I don't know if I felt confident enough to, if we lost one of them, especially such as one as Jayron Kearse, the leader of that group, that I would be like, man, we won't really fall off that much. But to be honest with you, we haven't. There have been some issues. They're not perfect. And there's some penalty issues with Donovan Wilson and everything like that. But he's flying around and he's being very active. And when you look at the combination of them three, the three of them, with Kearse when he comes back, which might be this week, with how Donovan Wilson's playing, with how well Malik Hooker's playing right now. I don't know if I knew this before, but I kind of felt good about the safety group, but I think we might have the best safety group in the NFL right now. And I think it's really, really strong, and it's really holding up the back end of that defense. And it's encouraging because this defense isn't giving up a lot of passing yards. And it's not like we're down a lot and teams are running on us. They're just not giving up a lot of passing yards. And that has a lot. I get it. That has a lot to do with the pass rush, and that has a lot to do with the pressure. I'm not saying it doesn't, but this safety group it's been really impressive in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm hoping when Kearse gets back, they use Wilson more as kind of that linebacker hybrid kind of guy, because he's so much better in his game. He's so much better coming downhill and attacking versus trying to read the routes and try to, like, he's not as great in coverage as he is in run support and coming downhill and containing and doing that stuff. He's really good at it. It's the coverage. So I hope when Kearse gets back, they do figure out how to kind of cycle through them to play to their strengths. And that'll be a huge boost. I think I'll actually even be a better boost if they can figure that out, because Kearse is a better coverage safety than it might allow them to do some different things, I guess, is what I'm saying, when Kearse gets back.
No, yeah, I get it.
So one of the things I think we've learned is that the wide receivers, we need something more to it, right? And you know, CD's had some drop issues. We knew that going into the season. This isn't like a surprise, right? We all knew that that was kind of one of the small questions out there, if he could be the W wide receiver one. We've seen a couple of times this season him get out muscled a little bit on the outside. Look, granted, he's come back and he's playing really well. I think we all see we need a little more size and a little bit better route running as wide receivers, as a whole group. But all of that said, I think one thing we learned was Noah Brown really is that guy, and they've kept him for a reason. I've always been high on him. I know you have. We've always been that guy who's like, look, Noah is kind of your perfect wide receiver four. He is that. He can step into any role. He kind of played a little tight endish. He can block for you. He's going to do everything you wanted him to do. He never had the playing time because he isn't that guy.
Yeah.
But Noah Brown right now is being that guy. Yeah. And I think that's a huge surprise to people. But I think we all see that we still need a little more. And hopefully Gallup coming back will help with that. But I think we all see we need a little more on the outside. But I think it's also in some ways better, because I think Brown's performing better than people expected.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Gallup, of course, is going to help as long as he's healthy and he's able to do what we know him to do, and that's to get down the field, to get the deep ball, to get the, you know, when Dak's in trouble and scrambling on a third down, Gallup is usually the guy he's looking for on the sideline. You know, go up and get the ball. That's Gallup's kind of style. That physicality. He's more of a physical receiver than a lamb. So that will definitely help. I agree with you with Brown. Brown's kind of showing that. Like, especially the last game, he went up and got some, made some tough contested pass catches, and still got extra yards after that contested catch. Mm-hmm. So I think he has developed into a solid number three receiver, in my opinion. I tweeted out before the Bucks game that I said Noah Brown is better than you think he is, and we had a really bad buck. We had a really bad game against the Bucks, and I got a lot of pushback from that game, saying, "Oh yeah, sure, look at this, you know." But the whole team was really bad that game. Since then, I've continued to look at that and retweet it, saying, "Hey, just a reminder, because Noah Brown is better than you think he is," and you're 100% right. On going into the season, a lot of people did not have him very high and did not think he could handle this role, and he's playing very, very well. So spot on there. This one is going to – my last one is going to – it might be surprising because it surprises me, because no matter how well our defense is playing – I've learned that the best unit on this team is special teams.
I could buy that.
And it's really because Maher has solidified that. There was a question mark there. So Maher has been outstanding. Anger is amazing. I mean, he had that one punt where it went in for a touchback. We were hoping it wouldn't, but that's pretty much the one punt. It hasn't been good this year. And then Turpin has shown on a kickoff last week, on a punt last week, that guy's a threat. Anytime he gets the ball, if you give him a little bit of space, he can go. So that's huge. And our special teams coverage has been really, really, really good. So I thought the defense was going to be the best unit on the team, but I think it's a special teams unit so far through 3 weeks.
That's a good one. Yeah. You know, and you know, people are thinking Turpin's ready to break one. Well, we'll see if he does. Yeah. You know? But you know,
so
people
close,
seem,
man.
That's why, is because people see him getting closer and closer, that they're just kind of waiting for that moment. But as we all know, it's not exactly easy to return a kickoff. Right. So like, let's see if he does it, but hopefully he will. And I think for my last one, this one's actually kind of, I am really interested to see how they continue to use Pollard going forward.
Yeah.
You know, there were a lot of people out there that thought, you know, it was going to be the Zeke show, right? People out there thought, you and I thought it, you know, Pollard was going to turn into this gadget slot guy, really. And while he has done some of that, he has absolutely shown he is one of those playmakers on this offense that we absolutely desperately need, that can hit a home run on you from anywhere. And I think that's something that we all kind of expected a role difference, like him to kind of get involved more. But I think this has actually so far been a little surprising in some ways, just because we know traditionally how they have felt about using him in certain capacities. Now, I am going to say, please stop using him as a pass blocker. Please. Dear God, please.
Yes.
Right. Like, I'm cool with him being on the field more. I am not cool with him being on the field trying to stop the linebacker from blitzing up the middle. Just going to leave it there. Right. But I think that is something we've learned, is how are they going to use it moving forward? But it's interesting to see how they've used him thus far.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to touch on the pass blocking thing, I completely agree with you. It should be Zeke out there all the time, especially on third down, on third and longs or whatever. If you're going to, you know, have Zeke as your third down back, at least you can rotate him, everything like that, but have him there on third down. So those pass blocking sets. And the concern people have is they're like, oh, well, if you do that, then, you know, you put him out there, then everybody's going to know what you're going to do. No, not necessarily, because Zeke can block, pass block. Zeke can go out for a Zeke can catch. He can go out for a pass, and Zeke can run the ball on third down. So just saw him.
Zeke doesn't break a ton of tackles, but he runs over a lot of tackles.
Yes, and we just saw him convert a third and 12 on a toss play. So no, that's wrong thinking that, oh, if Zeke's always out there on third down, that the defense is going to know what he can do, because literally you could do all three options with Zeke.
you're just giving yourself a better chance to pass block if you need to. Yeah,
exactly. So if you throw him out there, just, I know you want to keep Pollard in the rhythm and fine. And I'm actually fine with, hey, have Pollard out there for two drives. And if you get it on a third down and it's third and five, throw Zeke out there, do your thing. If you convert, throw Pollard back out there. Why? Why is that difficult? It's not difficult.
Throw them both out there.
Yeah, exactly. And that is something that I've noticed a lot these last 2 weeks, though, is that we have seen a lot of two running back sets. Yep. They've been out there together. There was a third and one or third and two where Zeke was actually the up back and he got the carry and got converted to first down. So getting creative with the running game the last couple weeks has been very refreshing.
Yeah, the Pollard thing is definitely, I think, just interesting to keep watching. You know, and we're saying that now. One of the things neither of us brought up was the offensive line, and I think part of that is because there's still questions in general along the offensive line, right? Yeah. We have some ideas, right? We know Tyler Smith is out there. He's had some penalty issues, but he's been doing really well in left tackle. You know, they tried working Peters in at left guard because Farniok is not it. Biadasz has not been ready. Biadasz has been good. He's had some mistakes, but he's been good. Of course, Zach Martin. And Steele started off really rough. Part of the quick passing has helped him over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, they're all better run blockers. But now you're starting to get Tyron Smith back. And so we're going to talk who's coming back off of injuries. Now, Tyron's the longest, which is why I want to start there, because he's probably not due to December. But as we're talking this, like, let's touch on that real quick. You're going to let Smith develop. You're going to figure out what to do with the left guard with Peters, probably. Let's say you're now in December and you get Tyron back and you're pushing for the playoffs. Do you pull Smith? Do you try to see if Tyron or Peters can play right tackle? Like, how? That's something, because he's potentially coming back this year. I wanted to touch on it now before we get to the more immediate people coming back.
It's such a tough question because offensive line relies a lot on continuity and working together and playing together.
And muscle memory.
And muscle memory. They're not doing what I think is the optimal offensive line, in my opinion. To maximize your potential, I think right now they should do Peters at left guard, Peters at left tackle, Tyler Smith at left guard, because in my opinion, Smith is a better guard than he is tackle at this point in his career. And obviously Peters is a better left tackle. Now I get it. Peters played two series at left guard, looked decent, had one really big block that sprang Pollard for that 46-yard run. So great. Hopefully that can be the whole thing. I don't know how I feel about him playing only two series in a game, but I get it. They're trying to work him up.
He's 40. He didn't have training camp. Like, that's
They're trying to work him back up. I don't know how long they're going to work him back up. Is next game he's full go, or are they going to get him a half? I don't like switching linemen in the middle of the game, so it's a little weird for me. But Farniak, like I said, Farniak's not ready for left guard right now. Farniak was a center his whole career. And they're trying to rotate and be the backup center, backup guard. He's still learning the guard position. It's different. So he's not ready for that. And he's been forced into the spotlight because of multiple injuries. Mm-hmm. And so he was your third option at guard. And so that's what you're getting when you fall down to your third string guard.
Yeah.
But they're fixing that. They're working on that. And like I said, Biadasz has been improved from last year. So that's good. Zach Martin's all God. Steele has improved from the first game and the last two, like you said, and that quick passing game. Look, people don't know this. A lot of people don't like to hear this, but Tyler Smith is one of the worst. I think going into last week, I don't know what he is updated from last week, going into last week, he has the worst pass block win rate among qualified tackles in the NFL. That means he's getting beat more than any other tackle within 2.5 seconds. But they're like, oh, he only given up one pressure. Well, yeah, because we're quick firing this thing, man. Yeah. And we're not allowing him to get pressures. So this quick fire passing game has helped him and has helped Steele a lot. And it's great. It's great. And we all know that they're beasts in the run blocking. So it's working well right now. So I know I'm kind of going the long way around answering this question. So I do apologize. But I'm just, what do you do? Do you mess with that continuity? Because it's going to be even more continuity going forward because we're talking about December. Or do you go back to arguably your second best offensive lineman in Tyler Smith? Mm-hmm. I mean, Tyron Smith. And he would be your best tackle on your team if he's healthy. So it's a huge question on what you do. Do you mess with the continuity or do you go back to your best option at the position? Me, I kind of want to go back to the best option at the position.
Yep. Now, I did an article. I haven't put it on Twitter yet, but I did an article yesterday about why the fallacy of best five really isn't always best five, right? Mm-hmm. And I talk a little bit about this because I'm like, look, you have to understand, if you're on the left side of the ball, you line up a very specific way each and every time, and you've done this 1,000 times. Yep. Now, go to the right side of the line all of a sudden, and now you have to literally learn to tell yourself to mirror everything you did, mm-hmm. right? Former Miami Dolphin offensive lineman had a quote about that, and somebody asked him about what the difference was playing from the left side of the line to the right side of the line. And he goes, it's kind of like trying to wipe your ass with the other hand, right? Yep. I mean, that's essentially what his answer was. He goes like, so, you know, you're right. I would too. But do you break up the continuity? Is whoever you put to the right side in place of, let's say, Steele, is anybody there going to be comfortable to play right? Because it's a mirroring. So, you know, yeah. Peters could probably do it. You know, maybe Tyron could because of their veterans. But at the end of the day, like, I don't know what that looks like. And that's something, you know, yeah, we got months to figure it out, but it's something to kind of, I wanted to mention because we need to look at that as December comes up and potentially playoff positioning is, you know, how do they handle that? So the next one, of course, Michael Gallup. Let's go straight to mm-hmm. Michael Gallup. You know, Curse may be back as well. You mentioned that one earlier. And we talked,
I think Curse is back this week.
Yeah. And that we talked about it earlier of how that will help our defense and all of that. So let's go straight to Gallup. Gallup says he made the decision not to play last week. I don't know. I mean, it wasn't like, I don't know, maybe, I'll take him at his word, but we also know how teams work and, you know, mm-hmm. we know there's sometimes other parts of the story that none of us know. So that said, let's say he comes back this week. We touched a little on it with his deep threat. One of the things I think Gallup allows you to do is if you put Brown and Gallup on the outside, it allows you to move CD Lamb around a little more and force teams to not have to be able to double him and force teams to be able to put their bigger receiver corners on Gallup or their bigger corner on Brown, and allows some of the physicality stuff we've seen with Lamb so far kind of fall by the wayside and use his strengths, which is, you know, getting underneath the stuff, you know, finding that hole through the defense to find that pocket that he can get into, allowing him to do some of those things. So I think Gallup also opens up potential for more CeeDee Lamb output, strictly based on how they use him in conjunction with Brown.
Yeah, I think you have difficulty as a defense trying to bracket Lamb as much, especially with safeties, because Gallup can get over the top of you. Mm-hmm. He's that type of receiver. He's just going to open it up to be able to move, like you said, to move CeeDee Lamb around a little bit more, to get him in that slot, get him away from the physicality of press coverage, be able to move him in motion a lot more. So I think Gallup really has the potential to open up this offense in a way that we can't right now, because we don't have that type of player that he is. And you know, it helps Noah Brown as well. It moves Noah Brown down to the number three wide receiver. He'll still be getting outside cornerback coverage, which, you know, that still a decent cornerback at times. But it, you know, it takes pressure off him as well. So I think we've said this from the beginning. Me and you have said that, look, we need other wide receiver help. I think even still, we should have brought in somebody to help out. But I said from the start that once Gallup comes back, I'm comfortable with the receiving core. Now, could it get better? Absolutely. But I'm comfortable with CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, and Noah Brown, and, you know, Tolbert.
The mix of Tolbert, Washington, Fajoco, the mix of Pollard, those guys, Pollard.
Throw Pollard in there every once in a while. I'm comfortable with that. That's a decent receiving core. I mean, it's not like the best in the league, but that's a decent receiving core that you can win with. So once Gallup gets back, he does open it up a lot, and hopefully he can get back and hit his stride soon, because sometimes we know that with these types of injuries, just coming back doesn't mean that you're back. Hopefully that he can hit his stride soon, and it can really start going.
And the last one, of course, we'll touch on real quick is Dak, you know, potentially next week, maybe the week after, I think it is. He wants to be back. What is it? The Eagles game.
It's a toss up, because so he had surgery on the 12th. Mm-hmm. If you go by the timeline of 4 to 6 weeks, I know it was 6 to 8 weeks at first. Throw that timeline off. The timeline 4 to 6 weeks. If you go off of that, that would put the game, his 4 weeks would be the day after the Rams game. If you go off of just the 4 to 6 weeks, then 4 weeks puts him after the Rams game, and he can come back for the Eagles game. However, Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones, and Dak have repeatedly said the target is the Rams game. Mm-hmm. Now, it's only one game. It's only one day sooner than 4 weeks. So it's not like way before. So it's one day before the 4 week mark of the surgery. So, I mean, you could still technically call it 4 weeks, it's 3 weeks and 6 days. So we'll see. That looks like their target. We'll have to see. He's supposed to throw later this week in practice to see how he can throw and grip and spin a ball. And that will be the determining factor. He's out this week against Washington. We'll see next week against the Rams if he can make a go. If not, I think that you're looking at the Eagles game.
Yeah, and, you know, him coming back, I think, opens up a little more mobility out of the quarterback position, which helps.
Oh, yeah.
You can allow some more of your bigger developing plays to develop, because, look, you're getting it out fast, and I think they're going to probably lean more towards that. But, you know, it wasn't until the Giants game that we saw really shots downfield. Part of that is because they're trying to get the ball out so fast. So I'm hoping that with Dak coming back, his mobility will allow a play to develop. Like, he can move around a little bit, which will allow the play to develop just a little longer. Maybe you get that deep shot to Gallup, or you get that, you know, seam route going up the middle from the tight end that we haven't seen a ton of yet this year. You know, and part of that, I think, to your point, is just they're trying to get the ball out as fast as possible for all of the reasons, just all of them.
You also have to look at that. Cooper Rush does not really have the arm strength to get the ball deep downfield.
He's got good touch, though. I'll give him that.
He does. He has great touch. He has good, you know, he's accurate on his passes that he can throw, but you can see it on the deeper throws. The big one wide open to Lamb was good. You know, that was a good throw.
But that was about it. That's about his max. Yeah.
His other deep throw to Lamb, where Lamb had a step on the defender and he had to slow down and allow the defender to get back on him and body him right when the ball was getting there and he couldn't bring it in. I still think, yes, Lamb should have caught that ball. He should have been able to fight through it and catch that ball. But if that's Dak Prescott, you're getting that. You're most likely getting that ball a little bit deeper, and Lamb doesn't have to slow down to get that ball. Mm-hmm. And the defender doesn't really got the chance to catch up as much. So I think that's why you're not seeing as many deep shots, just because Cooper Rush doesn't have that kind of arm strength.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think Dak's going to allow for potentially some more of that. Mm-hmm. You know, Dak says he's learning a lot on you know, how he's seeing things and how he's reading things because he's getting to watch it. So we'll see how it goes.
Man, what would you – I know he's on – let me just – sorry to interrupt. But no. I know he's on the sideline, and he's saying watching on the sideline is really – you know, he's seeing – he said, it's letting me see how easy this game can be, how simple mm-hmm. this game can be, he said. Man, I wonder if it would be a good idea, and they probably won't do this, but like just sit him up in the booth up top and you can see an overview of the game and just kind of get a view of that and see how it's viewed from that angle as well. And I wonder what he sees there. They probably won't do it. He'll probably want to be on the sideline, but I think that just this last game, just to get an overview of what's going on and how everything's breaking down would be a good idea.
And I think it helps. So, you know, he was put in as the starting quarterback and he's pretty much been the starting quarterback except for when he got the injury. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of quarterbacks sit for a year behind somebody and watch from the sideline and they see they see it. They hear the call in their ear in a different way than because there's no pressure that they're going to go in that day or the next game. They have a chance to learn. As long as the starter doesn't go down, they know they're not going. Their job is to learn. And so I wonder if he is in that mindset of, man, I am learning. Like, I know I'm not playing this week and next week. I don't have to prepare like I'm going to. I can actually sit back and watch this on almost like, why are so many backup quarterbacks great coaches? Partially because they get to watch the entirety of the game without the pressure of having to in play make that call, make that read, make that they're seeing it before they hit it. The problem is a lot of them don't have necessarily the talent to do it. But you know, that's why so many backup quarterbacks are good, because they see things that most others do not see.
And they're on the headsets too, listening mm-hmm. to all the adjustments and the play all the calls
adjustments and right, linebacker coach saying something, or the, you know, they get all the adjustments and they see all of it and they're like, I see what this is, right? They see they hear the defensive calls, right? They can hear, they hear it all. So they're like, oh, I see why you called that. I motioned a guy for you. Instead of you bringing the safety down, you move this guy out. I see what you're doing. You know, like, it allows that to happen. So it'll be interesting to see how he comes out after it. But I know, as like, I've been injured before in lots of things. And I know sometimes when you sit there, you get time to reflect. And as you get older, you just reflect more when you're injured. Trust me.
Yeah.
you know, and so I think maybe he's at that point where he's able to reflect on what he's seeing a little differently than 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Right. So just different. We'll see. So real quick, let's talk about what's one need for the Cowboys right now that you see. We're going to talk a little drafty stuff. One need for the Cowboys that you see, and let's just assume the Cowboys are picking somewhere in the middle of the first round. I'm not going to guess, you know, they're going to be a top 5 or 10. I'm not going to guess they're a bottom 5 or 10. Let's just say somewhere in the middle. What's the one position and one player you can think of?
Yeah. Wide receiver.
That's a good one.
Wide receiver. We're going to have to make it. We just re-signed Gallup. We're going to have to make a decision on CeeDee Lamb. And we need to make a decision on whether he's a wide receiver one. And there's still a lot of questions on that and whether he deserves a big, huge contract. So I think that wide receiver is an option in the first round. And call me a homer, but I'm looking at Jordan Addison just because of his he's got the speed. He can catch everything, and his after catch ability is amazing. With the ball in his hand, he's so dangerous. And so it really will depend on where we pick in the first round on whether or not we have a shot at him. But if we're in the middle of the rounds in the late teens, early 20s, I think you might have a shot at him. And as of right now, I mean, things can always change. So I think I would look at Jordan Addison, in my opinion.
I've seen his name usually somewhere in the middle of the drafts. So yeah, I could buy that. So, you know, I think left guard, and there's a couple guys, you know, I don't know if Paris Johnson, offensive tackle, could he play it? Yes. You know, do you go somewhere like that? The problem is like, there's a lot of guys who are like my guy, Staronsky, who, by the way, I hear you've seen.
Oh my goodness, man. Are you kidding me? That guy's amazing, man.
Amazing. Do you go that route? And so, I think that you can, you know, and I think Skoronski is still a name to watch, you know, because they're still figuring out what to do, you know, how they're going to handle Tyron Smith, Tyler Smith, how they're going to handle that, not just in the season, but moving forward.
Yeah.
Right. You got steel, potentially you got some center stuff you're working through. You know, I think if you really want to shore up that left side for a very long time, you get yourself Skoronski and you say to them, listen, guys, you two are my left side long term.
Man, Skoronski would I would absolutely love that pick.
And I get absolutely he's a tackle and he can pick. Play tackle. Don't get me wrong, this guy can play it. But I think if you put him and Smith together as guard tackle,
either or,
I think you've done yourself a huge service that left side of that line to protecting Dak for the next 6 to 8 years.
Absolutely. Like, you have locked down that. My only question is, would be we be able to get him? I don't know how far he's going to fall in the draft.
You know, I don't know either. I mean, that's part of the thing with the early part of the draft, right?
So like early,
you just kind of don't know. But you know, it's possible, you know, because
Kenyon Green, I mean, we didn't get a shot at Kenyon Green last year. He went in the late teens, but at this time last year, he was staying as a top 10 pick,
right?
You know, and he fell to the late teens. So yes, things can happen. So like you said, it's impossible to tell at this point. Yeah. Well,
and that kind of leads me to the last kind of topic is, you know, this is actually not a bad quarterback class.
It is not. It is. It's a strong quarterback class, in my opinion.
And so what we've seen in the past is people will move up. People try to do things to get that quarterback, and the quarterbacks go early, which pushes things down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. So my question for you, okay, who is your number one quarterback right now? And look, I'm saying this with a slight smirk on my face because I think we all know right now who the number one for most people who that is, but let's hear what you have to say.
I think there's a good debate between two guys right now. And call me a homer again, man. I'm going to go Caleb Williams.
All right.
I think Caleb Williams, his dual threat ability is really good. He's not like, and he's not this frail, like skinny guy running around there. He's a bigger guy and he has the mobility. He has the arm. It really would depend on if he comes out of the draft. He doesn't have to come out in the draft. He's only a sophomore, a true sophomore right now.
Yeah, a lot of the mocks I've seen so far that people have kind of done, they don't have him out.
Yeah. He might not come out.
He might not come out. So.
And if he doesn't come out, my number one guy would be CJ Stroud.
Yeah, I mean, who's next? Probably Bryce Young. Is your number two, which is, look, he's not bad, but right now CJ Stroud is kind of the guy, right? You also have Will Levis out of Kentucky. Don't sleep on this kid. Good. Like, I've seen some people being like, he's going to go in the top 10 to 15 to like the Giants. Don't sleep on this kid. But, you know, that's three quarterbacks right there that we know of, right? First round early. We haven't talked about Penix, who is a borderline, probably bottom of first round guy right now.
Yep.
Right now. And we know how valued quarterbacks are.
Like, jump up.
That,
yeah.
That is. Oh, and Anthony Richardson, right? Like,
yeah.
So that's five quarterbacks, potential first round quarterbacks right now that we know of. So getting a guy like Skoronski, while it sounds ridiculous, if there are that many quarterbacks with potential for more, let's just, we see it every year where some guy will sneak up at the end of the year or something. Five that we know of with potential for more, you could end up with a guy like a Skoronski because teams moved around and they didn't need a guard or a tackle. Maybe they needed wide receiver help and they need a cornerback, right? Like, those things happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially in head coach. When you have a QB heavy class, those things, guys fall down.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely. Yeah.
And if you guys have not watched CJ Stroud yet, if you have not watched this kid play,
this kid's good.
I think it's this week or next week. He's been playing without Smith and Jigba. Smith and Jigba has not played this, like, but the very bit of the first game, like, and he is killing it without his best wide receiver, arguably his best wide receiver.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely ridiculous. If I don't care if you're an Ohio State fan or not, like, go watch this kid play. You know, I know most Ohio State quarterbacks have fared well in the NFL.
And that's my pause. That's my pause, and it's not fair to him. I get it. It's not fair to him, and it's not even logical, in my opinion. It's not even logical because you can't be like, oh,
it's like Penn State running backs.
It's like, just because he went to this school, he's not going to be good. That's not even logical reasoning, but it's just like, but man, every one of them.
Yeah.
So like, I get it. The kid is amazing, like you said. He really, really is.
He's been playing extremely well. So good for him. And, you know, Williams has been playing well. I don't know if he comes out, like you said.
Might not.
But look, this Cam's going to love this. And you knew I was on this kid before he transferred. Michael Penix.
Yep.
Last year, I said there was, like, I don't remember if I said it online or in a chat. I said, there is something to this Michael Penix. He's not going to wow you. He's not going to be like, this guy is the most elite quarterback there is. But there is something to that kid that you watch him play it and you're like, he knows the game. He may not have all the physical tools, but he knows the game. And you can see it when he plays. I like Michael Penix. I've liked him. You know, now a little shout out to Cam because he transferred this year to Washington. But I got to watch him with the Big Ten. So I kind of knew who he was. But this Michael Penix kid, man. A little bit of a sneaky quarterback.
Oh yeah. He's been playing really well this year as well. Mm-hmm. He's got Washington playing well, and they're kind of the surprise in the Pac-12 right now. So he is one to watch.
Yep. Yeah. I wanted to give him a little shout out too, because I think we both talked about him last year a little bit. Keep an eye on Penix. Like I said, he's not going to all of a sudden you're going to watch him and be like, holy cow, this is the, you know, second coming of Montana. Like, it's not that, right? Like, but the kid is, he just has the kind of what you look for in a quarterback. You know, yeah. He makes good decisions. He reads it well. He sees things well. He knows what his limitations are, but plays within them. You know, he doesn't force a lot. Like, he's just a smart football player. So yeah, I definitely want to give him a little bit of a shout out. So, all right. Well, that is our quarter one wrap up. Joseph, I know a lot's been going on for you. So tell us all of the places we can find you.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy recently, but you can find me here on the 4D podcast. You can find me on Twitter at the J.A. Massey. You can find me on Thursday midday at 11:40, starting at 11:45 Pacific Standard Time, 1:45 Central, on YouTube on the Pick Six YouTube channel. With Cam for the midday show. And then soon we're fixing up the website. Soon you'll be able to get some written content from me again on the Pick Six website. I'll release that once the website's up and running, but that should be coming soon. So yeah, that is where you can find me.
Beautiful, beautiful. And of course you can find me at Dan_Rupert, R-U-P-P-E-R-T on the old Twitter. And of course, you can find me at Fansided at Sport DFW with Reed and Stevie and all of our guys over on there. Dink, I know he's over there. Funny dude. I keep telling you, funny dude. Go check out Dink's work. And then, of course, a little side thing. My wife and I are starting up soon a bodybuilding and weightlifting fitness thing for people middle age like we are. So keep an eye out for that. I will announce it awesome. A little more when it's on my Twitter. But we do have a whole thing getting ready to be built. So you'll be able to find me there as well.
Awesome, man. That's great.
All right, needed. Guys. Yeah. Yeah. Well, trust me, we've had a journey. So, all right, y'all. Well, we will catch you guys on the flip and, stay safe, stay healthy. And, everybody in Florida, we're praying for you.
Definitely.
Peace.